beside him, offering up an incoherent prayer that he was not dead. His nose was bleeding, and a terrible gout of blood had spilled out of his mouth. The side of his face was a puffed purple bruise. But he was breathing. Thank God for that. It was coming in long, harsh draws that shook his whole frame. Looking at him more closely, Wendy's eyes widened. One arm of the parka he was wearing was blackened and singed. One side of it had been ripped open. There was blood in his hair and a shallow but ugly scratch down the back of his neck.
My God, what's happened to him?
Danny!
The hoarse, petulant voice roared from above them.
Get out here, goddammit!
There was no time to wonder about it now. She began to shake him, her face twisting at the flare of agony in her ribs. Her side felt hot and massive and swollen.
What if they're poking my lung whenever I move?
There was no help for that either. If Jack found Danny, he would kill him, beat him to death with that mallet as he had tried to do to her. So she shook Halloran, and then began to slap the unbruised side of his face lightly.
Wake up, she said. Mr. Halloran, you've got to wake up, please, please.
From overhead, the restless booming sounds of the mallet as Jack Torrance looked for his son. Danny stood with his back against the door, looking at the right angle where the hallways joined. The steady, irregular booming sound of the mallet against the walls grew louder. The thing that was after him screamed and howled and cursed. Dream and reality had joined together without a seam. It came around the corner. In a way, what Danny felt was relief. It was not his father. The mask of face and body had been ripped and shredded and made into a bad joke. It was not his daddy, not this Saturday night shock show horror with its rolling eyes and hunched and hulking shoulders and blood-drenched shirt. It was not his daddy.
Now, by God!
It breathed. It wiped its lips with a shaking hand.
Now, you'll find out who is the boss around here. You'll see. It's not you they want. It's me. Me! Me!
It slashed out with the scarred hammer, its double head now shapeless and splintered with countless impacts. It struck the wall, cutting a circle in the silk paper. Plaster dust puffed out. It began to grin.
Let's see you pull any of your fancy tricks now, it muttered. I wasn't born yesterday, you know. Didn't just fall off the hay truck. By God, I'm gonna do my fatherly duty by you, boy.
Danny said, You're not my daddy. It stopped. For a moment, it actually looked uncertain, as if not sure who or what it was. Then it began to walk again. The hammer whistled out, struck a door panel, and made it boom hollowly.
You're a liar,
it said.
Who else would I be? I have the two birthmarks, I have the cupped navel, even the pecker, my boy. Ask your mother.
You're a mask, Danny said. Just a false face. The only reason the hotel needs to use you is that you aren't as dead as the others. But when it's done with you, you won't be anything at all. You don't scare me.
I'll scare you,
it howled. The mallet whistled fiercely down, smashing into the rug between Danny's feet. Danny didn't flinch.
You lied about me. You connived with her. You plotted against me. And you cheated. You copied that final exam.
The eyes glared out at him from beneath the furred brows. There was an expression of lunatic cunning in them.
I'll find it, too. It's down in the basement somewhere. I'll find it. They promised me I could look all I want.
It raised the mallet again.
Yes, they promise, Danny said. But they lie.
The mallet hesitated at the top of its swing. Halloran had begun to come around, but Wendy had stopped patting his cheeks. A moment ago, the words,
You cheated. You copied that final exam,
had floated down through the elevator shaft, dim, barely audible over the wind. From somewhere deep in the west wing. She was nearly convinced they were on the third floor, and that Jack, whatever had taken possession of Jack, had found Danny. There was nothing she or Halloran could do now.
Oh, Doc, she murmured.
Tears blurred her eyes.
Son of a bitch broke my jaw,
Halloran muttered thickly.
And my head.
He worked to sit up, His right eye was purpling rapidly and swelling shut. Still, he saw Wendy.
Mrs. Torrance.
Shh,
she said.
Where is the boy, Mrs. Torrance?
On the third floor, she said. With his father.
They lie, Danny said again. Something had gone through his mind, flashing like a meteor, too quick, too bright to catch and hold. Only the tail of the thought remained.
It's down in the basement somewhere. You will remember what your father forgot.
You shouldn't speak that way to your father,
it said hoarsely. The mallet trembled, came down.
You'll only make things worse for yourself. Your punishment. Worse.
It staggered drunkenly and stared at him with maudlin self-pity that began to turn to hate. The mallet began to rise again.
You're not my daddy, Danny told it again. And if there's a little bit of my daddy left inside you, he knows they lie here. Everything is a lie and a cheat. Like the loaded dice my daddy got for my Christmas stocking last Christmas. Like the presents they put in the store windows and my daddy says there's nothing in them. No presents, they're just empty boxes. Just for show, my daddy says. You're it, not my daddy. You're the hotel. And when you get what you want, you won't give my daddy anything because you're selfish. And my daddy knows that. You had to make him drink the bad stuff. That's the only way you could get him. You lying, false face.
Liar! Liar!
The words came in a thin shriek. The mallet wavered wildly in the air.
Go on and hit me, but you'll never get what you want from me.
The face in front of him changed. It was hard to say how. There was no melting or merging of the features. The body trembled slightly, and then the bloody hands opened like broken claws. The mallet fell from them and thumped to the rug. That was all. But suddenly his daddy was there, looking at him in mortal agony, and a sorrow so great that Danny's heart flamed within his chest. The mouth drew down in a quivering bow.
Doc,
Jack Torrance said,
run away, quick, and remember how much I love you.
No,
Danny said.
Oh, Danny, for God's sake.
No,
Danny said. He took one of his father's bloody hands and kissed it.
It's almost over.
Halloran got to his feet by propping his back against the wall and pushing himself up. He and Wendy stared at each other like nightmare survivors from a bombed hospital.
We gotta get up there, he said. We have to help him.
Her haunted eyes stared into his from her chalk-pale face.
It's too late, Wendy said. Now he can only help himself.
A minute passed, then two, three, and they heard it above them, screaming, not in anger or triumph now, but in mortal terror.
Dear God,
Halloran whispered.
What's happening?
I don't know, she said.
Has it killed him?
I don't know.
The elevator clashed into life and began to descend with the screaming, raving thing penned up inside. Danny stood without moving. There was no place he could run where the overlook was not. He recognized it suddenly, fully, painlessly. For the first time in his life, he had an adult thought, an adult feeling, the essence of this experience in this bad place, a sorrowful distillation. Mommy and Daddy can't help me, and I'm alone.
Go away,
he said to the bloody stranger in front of him.
Go on. Get out of here.
It bent over, exposing the knife handle in its back. Its hands closed around the mallet again, but instead of aiming at Danny, it reversed the handle, aiming the hard side of the roque mallet at its own face. Understanding rushed through Danny. Then the mallet began to rise and descend, destroying the last of Jack Torrance's image. The thing in the hall danced an eerie, shuffling polka, the beat counterpointed by the hideous sound of the mallet head striking again and again. Blood splattered across the wallpaper. Shards of bone leaped into the air like broken piano keys. It was impossible to say just how long it went on. But when it turned its attention back to Danny, his father was gone forever. What remained of the face became a strange, shifting composite, many faces mixed imperfectly into one. Danny saw the woman in 217, the dog man, the hungry boy thing that had been in the concrete ring.
"Masks off, then," it whispered. "No more interruptions."
The mallet rose for the final time. A ticking sound filled Danny's ears.
"Anything else to say?" it inquired. "Are you sure you wouldn't like to run? A game of tag, perhaps? All we have is time, you know. An eternity of time. Or shall we end it? Might as well. After all, we're missing the party."
It grinned with broken-toothed greed. And it came to him, what his father had forgotten. Sudden triumph filled his face. The thing saw it and hesitated, puzzled.
"The boiler!" Danny screamed. "It hasn't been dumped since this morning. It's going up! It's going to explode!"
An expression of grotesque terror and dawning realization swept across the broken features of the thing in front of him. The mallet dropped from its fisted hands and bounced harmlessly on the black and blue rug.
"The boiler!"
it cried.
"Oh, no! That can't be allowed. Certainly not. No, you goddamned little pup. Certainly not. Oh, oh, oh!"
"It is!"
Danny cried back at it fiercely. He began to shuffle and shake his fists at the ruined thing before him.
"Any minute now! I know it! The boiler! Daddy forgot the boiler! And you forgot it, too!"
"No! Oh, no, it mustn't! It can't, you dirty little boy! I'll make you take your medicine! I'll make you take every drop! Oh, no! Oh, no!"
It suddenly turned tail and began to shamble away. For a moment, its shadow bobbed on the wall, waxing and waning. It trailed cries behind itself like worn-out party streamers. Moments later, the elevator crashed into life. Suddenly, the shining was on him.
"Mommy, Mr. Halloran, Dick to my friends. Together, alive, they're alive, gotta get out. It's going to blow sky high."
Like a fierce and glaring sunrise, and he ran. One foot kicked the bloody, misshapen roque mallet aside. He didn't notice. Crying, he ran for the stairs. They had to get out. 56. The Explosion. Halloran could never be sure of the progression of things after that. He remembered that the elevator had gone down and past them without stopping, and something had been inside. But he made no attempt to try to see in through the small, diamond-shaped window, because what was in there did not sound human. A moment later, there were running footsteps on the stairs. Wendy Torrance at first shrank back against him, and then began to stumble down the main corridor to the stairs as fast as she could.
"Danny! Danny! Oh, thank God! Thank God!"
She swept him into a hug, groaning with joy as well as her pain. "Danny." Danny looked at him from his mother's arms, and Halloran saw how the boy had changed. His face was pale and pinched, his eyes dark and fathomless. He looked as if he had lost weight. Looking at the two of them together, Halloran thought it was the mother who looked younger, in spite of the terrible beating she had taken.
"Dick, we have to go. Run. The place. It's going to—"
Picture of the overlook, flames leaping out of its roof, bricks raining down on the snow, clang of fire bells, not that any fire truck would be able to get up here much before the end of March. Most of all, what came through in Danny's thought was a sense of urgent immediacy, a feeling that it was going to happen at any time.
"All right," Halloran said.
He began to move toward the two of them, and at first it was like swimming through deep water. His sense of balance was screwed, and the eye on the right side of his face didn't want to focus. His jaw was sending giant, throbbing bursts of pain up to his temple and down his neck, and his cheek felt as large as a cabbage. But the boy's urgency had gotten him going, and it got a little easier.
"All right?"
Wendy asked. She looked from Halloran to her son and back to Halloran.
"What do you mean, all right?"
"We have to go," Halloran said.
"I'm not dressed. My clothes—"
Danny darted out of her arms then and raced down the corridor. She looked after him, and as he vanished around the corner, back at Halloran.
"What if he comes back?"
Your husband?
He's not Jack, she muttered. Jack's dead. This place killed him. This damned place.
She struck at the wall with her fist and cried out at the pain in her cut fingers.
It's the boiler, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. Danny says it's going to explode.
Good.
The word was uttered with dead finality.
I don't know if I can get down those stairs again. My ribs. He broke my ribs and something in my back. It hurts.
You'll make it, Halloran said. We'll all make it.
But suddenly he remembered the hedge animals and wondered what they would do if they were guarding the way out. Then Danny was coming back. He had Wendy's boots and coat and gloves, also his own coat and gloves.
Danny, she said, your boots. It's too late, he said.
His eyes stared at them with a desperate kind of madness. He looked at Dick, and suddenly Halloran's mind was fixed with an image of a clock under a glass dome, the clock in the ballroom that had been donated by a Swiss diplomat in 1949. The hands of the clock were standing at a minute to midnight.
Oh, my God, Halloran said. Oh, my dear God.
He clapped an arm around Wendy and picked her up. He clapped his other arm around Danny. He ran for the stairs. Wendy shrieked in pain as he squeezed the bad ribs, as something in her back ground together, but Halloran did not slow. He plunged down the stairs with them in his arms, one eye wide and desperate, the other puffed shut to a slit. He looked like a one-eyed pirate abducting hostages to be ransomed later. Suddenly the shine was on him, and he understood what Danny had meant when he said it was too late. He could feel the explosion getting ready to rumble up from the basement and tear the guts out of this horrid place. He ran faster, bolting headlong across the lobby, toward the double doors. It hurried across the basement and into the feeble yellow glow of the furnace room's only light. It was slobbering with fear. It had been so close to having the boy and the boy's remarkable power. It could not lose now. It must not happen. It would dump the boiler and then chastise the boy harshly.
Mustn't happen, it cried. Oh, no, it mustn't happen.
It stumbled across the floor to the boiler, which glowed a dull red halfway up its long, tubular body. It was huffing and rattling and hissing off plumes of steam in 100 directions, like a monster calliope. The pressure needle stood at the far end of the dial.
No, it won't be allowed!
The manager caretaker cried. It laid its Jack Torrance hands on the valve, unmindful of the burning smell which arose, or the searing of the flesh as the red-hot wheel sank in, as if into a mud rut. The wheel gave, and with a triumphant scream, the thing spun it wide open. A giant roar of escaping steam bellowed out of the boiler, a dozen dragons hissing in concert. But before the steam obscured the pressure needle entirely, the needle had visibly begun to swing back.
I win!
It cried. It capered obscenely in the hot, rising mist, waving its flaming hands over its head.
Not too late! I win! Not too late! Not too late! Not—
Words turned into a shriek of triumph, and the shriek was swallowed in a shattering roar as the Overlook's boiler exploded. Halloran burst out through the double doors and carried the two of them through the trench in the big snowdrift on the porch. He saw the hedge animals clearly, more clearly than before, and even as he realized his worst fears were true, that they were between the porch and the snowmobile, the hotel exploded. It seemed to him that it happened all at once, although later he knew that couldn't have been the way it happened. There was a flat explosion, a sound that seemed to exist on one low, all-pervasive note. And then there was a blast of warm air at their backs that seemed to push gently at them. They were thrown from the porch on its breath, the three of them, and a confused thought, this is what Superman must feel like, slipped through Halloran's mind as they flew through the air. He lost his hold on them, and then he struck the snow in a soft billow. It was down his shirt and up his nose, and he was dimly aware that it felt good on his hurt cheek. Then he struggled to the top of it, For that moment, not thinking about the hedge animals or Wendy Torrance or even the boy, he rolled over on his back so he could watch it die. The Overlook's windows shattered. In the ballroom, the dome over the mantelpiece clock cracked, split in two pieces, and fell to the floor. The clock stopped ticking. Cogs and gears and balance wheel all became motionless. There was a whispered sighing noise and a great billow of dust. In 217, the bathtub suddenly split in two, letting out a small flood of greenish, noxious-smelling water. In the presidential suite, the wallpaper suddenly burst into flames. The batwing doors of the Colorado Lounge suddenly snapped their hinges and fell to the dining room floor. Beyond the basement arch, the great piles and stacks of old papers caught fire and went up with a blowtorch hiss. Boiling water rolled over the flames but did not quench them. Like burning autumn leaves below a wasp's nest, they whirled and blackened. The furnace exploded, shattering the basement's roof beams, sending them crashing down like the bones of a dinosaur. The gas jet, which had fed the furnace, unstoppered now, rose up in a bellowing pylon of flame through the riven floor of the lobby. The carpeting on the stair risers caught, racing up to the first floor level as if to tell dreadful good news. A fusillade of explosions ripped the place. The chandelier in the dining room, a 200-pound crystal bomb, fell with a splintering crash, knocking tables every which way. Flame belched out of the Overlook's five chimneys at the breaking clouds.
No! Mustn't! Mustn't! Mustn't!
It shrieked. It shrieked, but now it was voiceless, and it was only screaming panic and doom and damnation in its own ear, dissolving, losing thought and will, the webbing falling apart, searching, not finding, going out to fleeing, going out to emptiness, knotness, crumbling. The party was over. 57. Exit. The roar shook the whole facade of the hotel. Glass belched out onto the snow and twinkled there, like jagged diamonds. The hedge dog, which had been approaching Danny and his mother, recoiled away from it, its green and shadow-marbled ears flattening, its tail coming down between its legs as its haunches flattened abjectly. In his head, Halloran heard it whine fearfully, and mixed with that sound was the fearful, confused yowling of the big cats. He struggled to his feet to go to the other two and help them, and as he did so he saw something more nightmarish than all the rest. The hedge rabbit, still coated with snow, was battering itself crazily at the chain-link fence at the far end of the playground, and the steel mesh was jingling with a kind of nightmare music, like a spectral zither. Even from here he could hear the sounds of the close-set twigs and branches which made up its body, cracking and crunching, like breaking bones.
"Dick! Dick!"
Danny cried out. He was trying to support his mother, help her over to the snowmobile. The clothes he had carried out for the two of them were scattered between where they had fallen and where they now stood. Halloran was suddenly aware that the woman was in her nightclothes, Danny jacketless, and it was no more than 10 above 0.
"My God, she's in her bare feet."
He struggled back through the snow, picking up her coat, her boots, Danny's coat, odd gloves. Then he ran back to them, plunging hip-deep in the snow from time to time, having to flounder his way out. Wendy was horribly pale, the side of her neck coated with blood, blood that was now freezing.
"I can't,"
she muttered. She was no more than semi-conscious.
"No, I can't. Sorry."
Danny looked up at Halloran pleadingly.
"Gonna be okay," Halloran said, and gripped her again. "Come on."
The three of them made it to where the snowmobile had slewed around and stalled out. Halloran sat the woman down on the passenger seat and put her coat on. He lifted her feet up, they were very cold but not frozen yet, and rubbed them briskly with Danny's jacket before putting on her boots. Wendy's face was alabaster pale, her eyes half-lidded and dazed, but she had begun to shiver. Halloran thought that was a good sign. Behind them, a series of three explosions rocked the hotel. Orange flashes lit the snow. Danny put his mouth close to Halloran's ear and screamed something.
"What?"
I said, do you need that?
The boy was pointing at the red gas can that leaned at an angle in the snow.
I guess we do.
He picked it up and sloshed it. Still gas in there. He couldn't tell how much. He attached the can to the back of the snowmobile, fumbling the job several times before getting it right because his fingers were going numb. For the first time, he became aware that he'd lost Howard Cottrell's mittens.
I get out of this, I'm gonna have my sister knit you a dozen pair, Howie.
Get on!
Halloran shouted at the boy. Danny shrank back.
We'll freeze! We have to go around to the equipment shed! There's stuff in there, blankets, stuff like that! Get on behind your mother!
Danny got on, and Halloran twisted his head so he could shout into Wendy's face.
Mrs. Torrance, hold on to me. You understand? Hold on.
She put her arms around him and rested her cheek against his back. Halloran started the snowmobile and turned the throttle delicately so they would start up without a jerk. The woman had the weakest sort of grip on him, and if she shifted backward, her weight would tumble both her and the boy off. They began to move. He brought the snowmobile around in a circle, and then they were traveling west, parallel to the hotel. Halloran cut in more to circle around behind it, to the equipment shed. They had a momentarily clear view into the Overlook's lobby. The gas flame coming up through the shattered floor was like a giant birthday candle, fierce yellow at its heart and blue around its flickering edges. In that moment, it seemed only to be lighting, not destroying. They could see the registration desk with its silver bell, the credit card decals, the old-fashioned, scrolled cash register, the small-figured throw rugs, the high-backed chairs, horsehair hassocks. Danny could see the small sofa by the fireplace where the three nuns had sat on the day they had come up, closing day. But this was the real closing day. Then, the drift on the porch blotted the view out. A moment later, they were skirting the west side of the hotel. It was still light enough to see without the snowmobile's headlight. Both upper stories were flaming now, and pennants of flame shot out the windows. The gleaming white paint had begun to blacken and peel. The shutters which had covered the presidential suite's picture window, shutters Jack had carefully fastened as per instructions in mid-October, now hung in flaming brands, exposing the wide and shattered darkness behind them, like a toothless mouth yawing in a final, silent death rattle. Wendy had pressed her face against Halloran's back to cut out the wind, and Danny had likewise pressed his face against his mother's back. And so it was only Halloran who saw the final thing, and he never spoke of it. From the window of the presidential suite, he thought he saw a huge dark shape issue, blotting out the snowfield behind it. For a moment it assumed the shape of a huge, obscene manta, and then the wind seemed to catch it, to tear it and shred it like old, dark paper. It fragmented, was caught in a whirling eddy of smoke, and a moment later it was gone, as if it had never been. But in those few seconds, as it whirled blackly, dancing like negative motes of light, he remembered something from his childhood, 50 years ago or more. He and his brother had come upon a huge nest of ground wasps just north of their farm. It had been tucked into a hollow between the earth and an old lightning-blasted tree. His brother had had a big old nigger chaser in the band of his hat, saved all the way from the 4th of July. He had lighted it and tossed it at the nest. It had exploded with a loud bang, and an angry, rising hum, almost a low shriek, had risen from the blasted nest. They had run away as if demons had been at their heels. In a way, Halloran supposed the demons had been. And looking back over his shoulder, as he was now, he had on that day seen a large, dark cloud of hornets rising in the hot air, swirling together, breaking apart, looking for whatever enemy had done this to their home so that they, the single group intelligence, could sting it to death. Then the thing in the sky was gone, and it might only have been smoke or a great flapping swatch of wallpaper after all, and there was only the Overlook. A flaming pyre in the roaring throat of the night. There was a key to the equipment shed's padlock on his keyring, but Halloran saw there would be no need to use it. The door was ajar, the padlock hanging open on its hasp.
I can't go in there, Danny whispered.
That's okay. You stay with your mom.
There used to be a pile of old horse blankets, probably all moth-eaten by now, but better than freezing to death. Mrs. Torrance, you still with us?
I don't know, the wan voice answered. I think so.
Good. I'll be just a second.
Come back as quick as you can, Danny whispered. Please.
Halloran nodded. He had trained the headlamp on the door, and now he floundered through the snow, casting a long shadow in front of himself. He pushed the equipment shed door open and stepped in. The horse blankets were still in the corner, by the roque set. He picked up four of them. They smelled musty and old, and the moths certainly had been having a free lunch. And then he paused. One of the roque mallets was gone.
Was that what he hit me with?
Well, it didn't matter what he'd been hit with, did it? Still, his fingers went to the side of his face and began to explore the huge lump there. $600 worth of dental work undone at a single blow. And after all,
maybe he didn't hit me with one of those. Maybe one got lost, or stolen, or took for a souvenir. After all,
it didn't really matter. No one was going to be playing roque here next summer, or any summer in the foreseeable future. No, it didn't really matter. Except that looking at the racked mallets with the single missing member had a kind of fascination. He found himself thinking of the hard wooden whack of the mallet head striking the round wooden ball. A nice, summery sound. Watching it skitter across the bone, blood, gravel. It conjured up images of bone, blood, iced tea, porch swings, ladies in white straw hats, the hum of mosquitoes, and bad little boys who don't play by the rules. All that stuff. Sure. Nice game. Out of style now, but nice.
Dick?
The voice was thin, frantic, and he thought rather unpleasant.
Are you all right, Dick? Come out now. Please.
Come on out now, nigga. The massa calling y'all.
His hand closed tightly around one of the mallet handles, liking its feel.
Spare the rod, spoil the child.
His head went blank in the flickering, fire-shot darkness. Really, it would be doing them both a favor. She was messed up, in pain, and most of it, all of it, was that damn boy's fault. Sure, he had left his own daddy in there to burn. When you thought of it, it was damn close to murder. Patricide was what they called it. Pretty goddamn low.
Mr. Halloran?
Her voice was low, weak, querulous. He didn't much like the sound of it.
Dick?
The boy was sobbing now, in terror. Halloran drew the mallet from the rack and turned toward the flood of white light from the snowmobile headlamp. His feet scratched unevenly over the boards of the equipment shed, like the feet of a clockwork toy that has been wound up and set in motion. Suddenly he stopped, looked wonderingly at the mallet in his hands, and asked himself with rising horror what it was he had been thinking of doing.
Murder? Had he been thinking of murder?
For a moment his entire mind seemed filled with an angry, weakly hectoring voice.
Do it! Do it, you weak-kneed, no-balls nigger! Kill them! Kill them both!
Then he flung the mallet behind him with a whispered, terrified cry. It clattered into the corner where the horse blankets had been. One of the two heads pointed toward him in an unspeakable invitation. He fled. Danny was sitting on the snowmobile seat, and Wendy was holding him weakly. His face was shiny with tears, and he was shaking as if with ague. Between his clicking teeth, he said,
"Where were you? We were scared."
"It's a good place to be scared of," Halloran said slowly. "Even if that place burns flat to the foundation, you'll never get me within 100 miles of here again. Here, Mrs. Torrance, wrap these around you. I'll help. You too, Danny. Get yourself looking like an Arab."
He swirled two of the blankets around Wendy, fashioning one of them into a hood to cover her head, and helped Danny tie his so they wouldn't fall off.
"Now hold on for dear life," he said. "We got a long way to go, but the worst is behind us now."
He circled the equipment shed and then pointed the snowmobile back along their trail. The overlook was a torch now, flaming at the sky. Great holes had been eaten into its sides, and there was a red hell inside, waxing and waning. Snowmelt ran down the charred gutters in steaming waterfalls. They purred down the front lawn, their way well lit. The snow dunes glowed scarlet.
Look!
Danny shouted as Halloran slowed for the front gate. He was pointing toward the playground. The hedge creatures were all in their original positions, but they were denuded, blackened, seared. Their dead branches were a stark, interlacing network in the fire glow, their small leaves scattered around their feet like fallen petals.
They're dead!
Danny screamed in hysterical triumph.
Dead! They're dead!
Shh,
Wendy said.
All right, honey. It's all right.
Hey, Doc, Halloran said. Let's get to someplace warm. You ready?
Yes,
Danny whispered.
I've been ready for so long.
Halloran edged through the gap between gate and post. A moment later they were on the road, pointed back toward Sidewinder. The sound of the snowmobile's engine dwindled until it was lost in the ceaseless roar of the wind. It rattled through the denuded branches of the hedge animals with a low, beating, desolate sound. The fire waxed and waned. Sometime after the sound of the snowmobile's engine had disappeared, the overlook's roof caved in, first the west wing, then the east, and seconds later the central roof. A huge, spiraling gout of sparks and flaming debris rushed up into the howling winter night. A bundle of flaming shingles and a wad of hot flashing were wafted in through the open equipment shed door by the wind. After a while, the shed began to burn too. They were still 20 miles from Sidewinder when Halloran stopped to pour the rest of the gas into the snowmobile's tank. He was getting very worried about Wendy Torrance, who seemed to be drifting away from them. It was still so far to go.
Dick!
Danny cried. He was standing up on the seat, pointing.
Dick, look! Look there!
The snow had stopped, and a silver dollar moon had peeked out through the raftering clouds. Far down the road, but coming toward them, coming upward through a series of S-shaped switchbacks, was a pearly chain of lights. The wind dropped for a moment, and Halloran heard the faraway buzzing snarl of snowmobile engines. Halloran and Danny and Wendy reached them 15 minutes later. They had brought extra clothes and brandy and Dr. Edmonds. And the long darkness was over. 58. Epilogue. Summer. After he had finished checking over the salads his understudy had made, and peeked in on the home-baked beans they were using as appetizers this week, Halloran untied his apron, hung it on a hook, and slipped out the back door. He had maybe 45 minutes before he had to crank up for dinner in earnest. The name of this place was the Red Arrow Lodge, and it was buried in the western Maine mountains, 30 miles from the town of Rangeley. It was a good gig, Halloran thought. The trade wasn't too heavy, it tipped well, and so far there hadn't been a single meal sent back. Not bad at all, considering the season was nearly half over. He threaded his way between the outdoor bar and the swimming pool, although why anyone would want to use the pool with the lake so handy he would never know. Crossed a greensward where a party of four was playing croquet and laughing, and crested a mild ridge. Pines took over here, and the wind soughed pleasantly in them, carrying the aroma of fir and sweet resin. On the other side, a number of cabins with views of the lake were placed discreetly among the trees. The last one was the nicest, and Halloran had reserved it for a party of two back in April when he had gotten this gig. The woman was sitting on the porch in a rocking chair, a book in her hands. Halloran was struck again by the change in her. Part of it was the stiff, almost formal way she sat, in spite of her informal surroundings. That was the back brace, of course. She'd had a shattered vertebra, as well as 3 broken ribs and some internal injuries. The back was the slowest healing, and she was still in the brace, hence the formal posture. But the change was more than that. She looked older, and some of the laughter had gone out of her face. Now, as she sat reading her book, Halloran saw a grave sort of beauty there that had been missing on the day he had first met her, some 9 months ago. Then she had still been mostly girl. Now she was a woman, a human being who had been dragged around to the dark side of the moon, and had come back able to put the pieces back together. But those pieces, Halloran thought, they never fit just the same way again. Never in this world. She heard his step and looked up, closing her book.
Dick, hi.
She started to rise, and a little grimace of pain crossed her face.
Nope, don't get up, he said. I don't stand on no ceremony unless it's white tie and tails.
She smiled as he came up the steps and sat down next to her on the porch.
How's it going?
Pretty fair, he admitted. You try the shrimp creole tonight. You're gonna like it.
That's a deal.
Where's Danny?
Right down there.
She pointed, and Halloran saw a small figure sitting at the end of the dock. He was wearing jeans rolled up to the knee and a red-striped shirt. Further out on the calm water, a bobber floated. Every now and then Danny would reel it in, examine the sinker and hook below it, and then toss it out again.
He's getting brown, Halloran said.
Yes, very brown.
She looked at him fondly. He took out a cigarette, tamped it, lit it. The smoke raftered away lazily in the sunny afternoon.
What about those dreams he's been having?
Better, Wendy said. Only one this week. It used to be every night, sometimes two and three times. The explosions, the hedges, and most of all, you know.
Yeah. He's going to be okay, Wendy.
She looked at him.
Will he?
I wonder. Halloran nodded.
You and him, you're coming back.
Different, maybe, but okay.
You ain't what you were, you two, but
that isn't necessarily bad.
They were silent for a while, Wendy moving the rocking chair back and forth a little, Halloran with his feet up on the porch rail smoking. A little breeze came up, pushing its secret way through the pines but barely ruffling Wendy's hair. She had cut it short.
I've decided to take Al, Mr. Shockley, up on his offer, she said.
Halloran nodded.
It sounds like a good job. Something you could get interested in. When do you start?
Right after Labor Day.
When Danny and I leave here, we'll be going right on to Maryland to look for a place. It was really the Chamber of Commerce brochure that convinced me, you know. It looks like a nice town to raise a kid in. And I'd like to be working again before we dig too deeply into the insurance money Jack left. There's still over $40,000. Enough to send Danny to college, with enough left over to get him a start, if it's invested right. Halloran nodded.
Your mom?
She looked at him and smiled wanly.
I think Maryland is far enough.
You won't forget old friends, will you?
Danny wouldn't let me. Go on down and see him. He's been waiting all day.
Well, so have I.
He stood up and hitched his cook's whites at the hips.
The two of you are going to be okay, he repeated.
Can't you feel it?
She looked up at him, and this time her smile was warmer.
Yes, she said. She took his hand and kissed it. Sometimes I think I can.
The shrimp creole, he said, moving to the steps. Don't forget.
I won't.
He walked down the sloping, graveled path that led to the dock, and then out along the weather-beaten boards to the end, where Danny sat with his feet in the clear water. Beyond, the lake widened out, mirroring the pines along its verge. The terrain was mountainous around here, but the mountains were old, rounded and humbled by time. Halloran liked them just fine.
Catching much?
Halloran said, sitting down next to him. He took off one shoe, then the other. With a sigh, he let his hot feet down into the cool water.
No, but I had a nibble a little while ago.
We'll take a boat out tomorrow morning. Got to get out in the middle if you want to catch any eating fish, my boy. Out yonder is where the big ones lay.
How big?
Halloran shrugged. Oh, sharks, marlin, whales, that sort of thing.
There aren't any whales.
No blue whales, no.
Of course not. These ones here run to no more than 80 feet. Pink whales.
How could they get here from the ocean?
Halloran put a hand on the boy's reddish-gold hair and rumpled it.
They swim upstream, my boy. That's how.
Really?
Really.
They were silent for a time, looking out over the stillness of the lake, Halloran just thinking. When he looked back at Danny, he saw that his eyes had filled with tears. Putting an arm around him, he said,
What's this?
Nothing,
Danny whispered.
You're missing your dad, aren't you?
Danny nodded.
You always know.
One of the tears spilled from the corner of his right eye and trickled slowly down his cheek.
We can't have any secrets, Halloran agreed. That's just how it is.
Looking at his pole, Danny said,
Sometimes I wish it had been me. It was my fault. All my fault.
Halloran said,
You don't like to talk about it around your mom, do you?
No, she wants to forget it ever happened. So do I, but...
But you can't.
No.
Do you need to cry?
The boy tried to answer, but the words were swallowed in a sob. He leaned his head against Halloran's shoulder and wept, the tears now flooding down his face. Halloran held him and said nothing. The boy would have to shed his tears again and again, he knew, and it was Danny's luck that he was still young enough to be able to do that. The tears that heal are also the tears that scald and scourge. When he had quieted a little, Halloran said,
You're gonna get over this. You don't think you are right now, but you will. You got the shot.
I wish I didn't.
Danny choked, his voice still thick with tears.
I wish I didn't have it.
But you do, Halloran said quietly. For better or worse. You didn't get no say, little boy. But the worst is over. You can use it to talk to me when things get rough. And if they get too rough, you just call me, and I'll come.
Even if I'm down in Maryland?
Even there.
They were quiet, watching Danny's bobber drift around 30 feet out from the end of the dock. Then Danny said, almost too low to be heard,
You'll be my friend?
As long as you want me.
The boy held him tight, and Halloran hugged him.
Danny, you listen to me. I'm going to talk to you about it this once, and never again the same way. There's some things no 6-year-old boy in the world should have to be told. But the way things should be and the way things are hardly ever get together. The world's a hard place, Danny. It don't care. It don't hate you and me, but it don't love us either. Terrible things happen in the world, and they're things no one can explain. Good people die in bad, painful ways, and leave the folks that love them all alone. Sometimes it seems like it's only the bad people who stay healthy and prosper. The world don't love you. But your mama does, and so do I. You're a good boy. You grieve for your daddy. And when you feel you have to cry over what happened to him, you go into a closet or under your covers and cry until it's all out of you again. That's what a good son has to do. But see that you get on. That's your job in this hard world, to keep your love alive and see that you get on, no matter what. Pull your act together. And just go on.
All right, Danny whispered. I'll come see you again next summer if you want, if you don't mind. Next summer I'm going to be 7.
And I'll be 62. And I'm going to hug your brains out your ears. But let's finish one summer before we get on to the next.
Okay.
He looked at Halloran.
Dick?
Hmm?
You won't die for a long time, will you?
I'm sure I'm not studying on it, are you?
No, sir.
You got a bite, sonny.
He pointed. The red and white bobber had ducked under. It came up again, glistening, and then went under again.
Hey!
Danny gulped. Wendy had come down and now joined them, standing in back of Danny.
What is it?
She asked.
Pickerel?
No, ma'am, Halloran said. I believe that's a pink whale.
The tip of the fishing rod bent. Danny pulled it back, and a long fish, rainbow-colored, flashed up in a sunny, winking parabola, and disappeared again. Danny reeled frantically, gulping.
Help me, Dick! I got him! I got him! Help me!
Halloran laughed.
You're doing fine all by yourself, little man. I don't know if it's a pink whale or a trout, but it'll do. It'll do just fine.
He put an arm around Danny's shoulders, and the boy reeled the fish in, little by little. Wendy sat down on Danny's other side, and the three of them sat on the end of the dock in the afternoon sun.
The Shining was written by Stephen King. and read by Campbell Scott. The recording engineer was Erica Weintraub, with editing and post-production by Common Mode. Paul Fowley, technical director. The mix engineer was Terry Hogan. The associate producer was Sarah Ginsberg. The Shining was produced and directed by Kelly Gilday. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.